Hi, Dave Emmer here. This is For the Record program number 1372, Korea on Our Minds, part 5. This is being recorded on February 1st of the year 2025. We have been dealing in the new year with some frightening events in Korea, which could easily lead to a third world war and nuclear annihilation, and also when President Yoon of South Korea attempted to establish martial law. There are some very interesting parallels between Yoon and Team Trump and what Donald Trump has been doing. Before we get into the main body of the program, and I'm going to overlap an article I've been reading from Counterpunch magazine with sections that I read in 1371. Please get the new 64-gigabyte flash drive. It isn't ready yet. All of the programs on Korea will be on it. It is really important to preserve the record for the generations that come afterward because, well, frankly, I think we are doomed. They don't call me Good Time Dave Emery for nothing. I get no money whatsoever from this flash drive. The old 32-gigabyte flash drives are too small, so the new one will be 64 gigabytes. And there's also a small mini library that's redundant of old anti-fascist books on easy to download PDF files that is on that flash drive. And again, I get no money whatsoever from this, and this is my entire life's work. Now, we have been reading from an article from Counterpunch magazine from January 3rd of 2025. How Yoon Planned to Set South Korea on the Path to Military Dictatorship by Gregory Ellich, E-L-I-C-H. Now, I'm going to overlap the reading of this article with what we read in our last program. A section called Military Emergency as Justification for Military Rule, and it concerns attempts at provoking a war with North Korea, a reignition, so to speak, of the Korean War. North Korea wasn't a nuclear power in that war, and it is now. And it also very possibly involved the staging of a several false flag operations, including one that would basically have attempted to drag the U.S. into the war and precipitated a U.S. attack on North Korea by killing U.S. Military personnel. This next section, again, military emergency as justification for military rule. As December 3rd, the day of martial law, approached, the Yoon administration sought to establish a legal framework for military rule that the National Assembly could not reverse. Military necessity was one option. All one had to do was to create a conflict with North Korea, and then no one could stop martial law. Astonishingly, the conspirators imagined that they could fine-tune the level of North Korea's response just enough to manufacture a conflict while sacrificing some South Korean lives along the way, but without plunging the peninsula into a far more serious war. One more time. All one had to do was to create a conflict with North Korea, and then no one could stop martial law. Astonishingly, the conspirators imagined that they could fine-tune the level of North Korea's response just enough to manufacture a conflict while sacrificing some South Korean lives along the way, but without plunging the peninsula into a far more serious war. However, always in the conflict, the other side makes its calculations, and it is a delusion to believe that those can be externally guided. Those South Korean citizens who may have lost their lives in the process were not a factor for consideration. In one of the efforts to stir up trouble, South Korea sent drones over Pyongyang in October, releasing propaganda leaflets. Based on reports provided by Democratic Party investigators, it was the Office of National Security that ordered Drone Command to launch the cross-border drones, bypassing the Ministry of National Defense and Joint Chiefs of Staff. However, the military produced and supplied the propaganda leaflets to be dropped. Hoping for a response from the North Koreans, the Joint Chiefs of Staff announced, quote, In the event of a drone infiltration, we will respond accordingly and take due measures, unquote. However, the South Korean military reaped only disappointment as North Korea failed to take the bait, denying the South of an opportunity for disproportionate retaliation. As we noted, there was for the record, 1370, there was a suspicious fire at the base where those drones appeared to come from, possibly set to cover up the tracks of the conspirators. Continuing, a more surefire approach was needed. Ro Sang-wan's notebook documented a more reckless concept. The northern limit line is a highly disputed maritime boundary off the western coast that had been drawn without North Korean participation, angling sharply northwards to hand over to South Korea a few islands that, in normal practice, would have belonged to the north. If one wanted to provoke a conflict, this would be a promising location to do so. In his notebook, Ro had written down the phrase, inducing a North Korean attack around the Northern Limit Line, or NLL. First, the scene had to be set, and on June 3, 2024, the South Korean military nullified its September 19, 2018 agreement with North Korea that had, among other things, bound both sides to, quote, cease all live fire and maritime maneuvers off the West Coast. Later that month, the South Korean Marine Corps on the western islands of Yeongjang-yong and Byeongryong-do fired 300 rocket, missile, and howitzer rounds. When that failed to elicit the desired reaction from the north, additional large-scale firing drills were conducted in September and November. One South Korean military official commented, quote, we thought this should have been enough to trigger a response from the North Korean military, but there was no reaction. And there was no sign of provocation. There is a discernible tone of disappointment in that statement. Another contentious issue in inter-Korean relations that held potential was related to the decades-long practice of right-wing groups in South Korea sending balloons over the border to dump propaganda materials. Tons upon tons of material repeatedly strewn across the landscape forced North Korea to expend enormous time and money in cleanup efforts. For years, the North Koreans limited themselves to complaints about the practice, generally to no avail. Finally, in May of 2024, the exasperated North Koreans decided to give their neighbors in the South a taste of their own medicine. Over a period of several months, a series of trash-dumping balloons were sent across the border, imposing on the South Koreans their own need for expensive cleanup operations. One more time. Over a period of several months, a series of trash-dumping balloons were sent across the border, imposing on the South Koreans their own need for expensive cleanup operations. Here surely was an opportunity, martial law planners concluded. Since the North Koreans failed to respond as desired to indirect attempts to trigger conflict, then more direct action could do the trick. At more than one point, Ro and Defense Minister Kim discussed the potential ramifications of attacking balloon launch sites. They expected that North Korea would respond with countermeasures. In turn, South Korea could next strike Pyongyang, leading to an all-out war. This was too much even for an extremist such as Ro, who expressed reservations that Kim, the defense minister, did not share. Undeterred, Defense Minister Kim Jong-hyun established a chain of command dedicated to Operation North Wind to prepare for an artillery attack on North Korea. According to an inside military source, 5 days before the martial law decree, Defense Minister Kim ordered Kim Myung-soo, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, to carry out military strikes on North Korean balloon launch sites, an act of war that could have led to disastrous and uncontrollable consequences. Fortunately for Koreans on both sides of the border, Chairman Kim Myung-soo refused to follow such an irresponsible order. For his understandable caution, he was rewarded by having Defense Minister Kim Jong-un shower him with verbal abuse. In the end, none of these potential pathways to producing a military conflict bore fruit, and impatience may have driven Yoon to act when he did. Yoon's plunging approval had dropped to 17% the month before martial law, accentuating his political failure and almost certainly hastening his urge to act. A single source, an HIV agent whose name has not been revealed for obvious reasons, contacted Assemblyman Lee Kuan-hee and provided details on one of the wilder schemes meant to buttress the case for martial law. Given the source and the ample evidence that the insurrectionists were capable of anything, his story cannot be too readily dismissed. According to this informant, the 35 HIB agents deployed in Seoul had each been armed with 5 pistol magazines and a C4 plastic explosive. Their assignment was to create violent incidents if the martial law plan fell apart, which would then provide President Yoon with the pretext he needed for a second martial law adventure. The HIB agents were not told when they would go into action. They only had to wait for the order to proceed. Their assigned targets were the Chongju International Airport, the THAAD anti-missile base at Chongju, and the military airbase at Daegu. To maximize effect, American military assets were among the targets. The HIB informant felt conflicted about his mission when he realized that he had been asked to carry out an act of terrorism, and that led him to reveal what he knew in the hope that publicity would, quote, stop the mission as soon as possible, unquote. This informant's revelation appeared to have his desired impact, as once the story made the news, the order came down to the HIB agents to cancel their missions. Democratic Assemblyman Park Sun-hwan, a former National Intelligence Service deputy director, pointed out that hitting those targets would inevitably involve the U.S. military. Presumably, that intervention would have supported Yoon against his contrived enemies. Park also believes that if Yoon had managed to trigger a conflict with North Korea, that would have enabled martial law forces to more freely kill political opponents. There have also been uncorroborated reports that the martial law command had planned assassinations and other acts of violence to provide a falsified pretext for martial law in which South Korean soldiers would be suited in uniforms of the North Korean People's Army to misdirect responsibility. However, it does appear that an operation of this sort may have been in the works, although at this time the evidence for the allegation is thin. In August, the Defense Intelligence Command contracted with a private company to manufacture 170 North Korean military uniforms to be delivered in the first week of December. The company, which had experience in manufacturing uniforms, was supplied with an actual North Korean uniform to use as a model. The ostensible purpose for the request was that the uniforms were needed to produce a movie, an unlikely scenario for the Defense Intelligence Command. Despite the company's skepticism about the state of need, it made the uniforms and delivered them by December 6th, by which time martial law had collapsed. And one more time, I'm going to repeat a couple of passages, because the danger inherent here, suppose this had gone forward, or suppose another scenario like this goes forward, do you think Trump would have the circumspection to avoid conflagration? To maximize effect, American military assets were among the targets. The HIB informant felt conflicted about his mission when he realized that he had been tasked to carry out an act of terrorism, and that led him to reveal what he knew in the hope that publicity would, quote, stop the mission as soon as possible, unquote. The informant's revelation appeared to have had its desired impact, as once the story made the news, the order came down to the HIB agents to cancel their missions. Democratic Assemblyman Park Sun-hwan, a former Intelligence Service Deputy Director, pointed out that hitting those targets would inevitably involve the U.S. military. Presumably, that intervention would have supported Yoon against his contrived enemies. Park also believes that if Yoon had managed to trigger a conflict with North Korea, that would have enabled martial law forces to more freely kill political opponents. There have also been uncorroborated reports that martial law command had planned assassinations and other acts of violence to provide a falsified pretext for martial law in which South Korean soldiers would be suited in uniforms of the North Korean People's Army to misdirect responsibility. So again, those attacks on American military personnel might very well have been conducted by South Korean military forces wearing North Korean military uniforms. If something like that were to happen, do you think Trump would be able to go, well, maybe we better hold off and see what happened? Don't bet on that. Just watch his immediate blaming of the tragic air collision in Washington, D.C. on DEI and so forth. I mean, it just... Again, you have a president who basically said at a press conference, if you get infected with COVID, just ingest some disinfectant and you'll be good to go. Again, an eight-year-old knows better than that. But not the commander-in-chief. Continuing. The next section, relations with the United States. For the U.S., Yoon had been a dream come true, a president who wholeheartedly embraced his assigned role as a junior partner in the anti-China tripart military alliance with the U.S. and Japan. If Washington had any deep concern about martial law, it would only be that failure might risk opening the door to a less enthused, albeit still obedient, partner for U.S. militarism. Certainly, U.S. relations with South Korea would not have been adversely impacted by military dictatorship, as attested to by U.S. relations during South Korea's previous experiences under martial law, and other cases such as Pinochet's Chile or Suharto's Indonesia, by the last two, the result of U.S.-supported coups d'etat. Continuing, what the U.S. did care about, and deeply so, was that regardless of events, South Korea would maintain its support for U.S. military confrontation with China, again, along with Japan. That is all that mattered, even if the freedom of South Korean people had to be sacrificed along the way. All the U.S. had to offer regarding Korea's internal situation were anodyne comments, phrased so as not to antagonize any party. The Biden administration was far more active in laying stress on the expectation that South Korea should continue supporting U.S. militarism in the Asia-Pacific. Numerous statements and direct contacts were made to Seoul to remind them of the fact, including, one more time, numerous statements and direct contacts were made to Seoul to remind them of that fact, including a personal visit from U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Kurt Campbell. The next section, military dictatorship over the long term. So far, investigators have mainly centered their attention on the events leading up to and during the period of martial law. It is hoped that they will also address an additional question. What were the insurrectionists' long-term plans? How did they envision military rule in the months and years to come? We do not have much direct information yet. Still, we can discern Yoon's objectives in general terms based on the speech he delivered on December 3rd, in which he excoriated the National Assembly as, quote, a band of criminals, unquote. He went on to threaten, quote, to immediately eradicate the unscrupulous pro-Pyongyang anti-state forces, unquote, using his customary twisted characterization of progressives, trade unionists, activists, and the majority of Democratic Party members and supporters. One can conclude that a vast swath of Korean society would have been impelled. And note, again, that tactic of tarring any sort of critic or activist as, quote, a commie, unquote, or sympathetic Pyongyang, the capital of North Korea, that dates back to the Japanese occupation of Korea, and was continued forth into the post-Japanese occupation period. Continuing. Let us also dwell upon Yoon's choice of the word eradicate in that speech. It was a strong word, and Yoon deemed it important enough that he spoke about it three times. What kind of violence was Yoon suggesting with such language? We know the martial law command was preparing for a significant influx of prisoners. However, mass incarceration is not necessarily synonymous with eradication. Yoon may have had something more permanent in mind. Additionally, Yoon had already demonstrated that he had no compunction in employing violence and that at a minimum, plans included executing at least some high-profile prisoners and violently torturing election officials. Might many ordinary citizens also have been similarly, quote, eradicated, unquote? Even if this would not have been the case, under martial law, Korean society as a whole was fated to be subjected to repression on a mass scale. Furthermore, Yoon envisioned military rule as a long-term process. Just hours before announcing martial law, he issued a directive to, quote, prepare a reserve fund for the emergency martial law legislative body, unquote, to replace the National Assembly. One does not establish a military-appointed legislature without anticipating that it will be in place for years. And the last section of the article, looking to the future. Yoon's defiant attitude toward investigators has hindered progress in the impeachment process, allowing him to systematically destroy evidence. In addition to obstructing legal procedures, his seditious messages are rousing extremist elements within the ruling People's Power Party and among his supporters to back his refusal to relinquish power. Some fanatics have even begun to advocate violent measures. In his New Year message, Yoon warned that South Korea was in danger from, quote, anti-state groups, unquote, referring to advocates for the restoration of democracy and legality. Yoon added, quote, with you I will fight to the end to protect this country, unquote, signaling extremists to mobilize a tenacious and potentially violent resistance to keep him in power. Again, just think about January 6th and Trump's pardoning of all of those people. One more time. Although stripped of active duties, Yoon remains as president of South Korea. It may take months for the Constitutional Court to reach a ruling on impeachment, and if the court fails to uphold Yoon's impeachment, he will return to active duty as president. In that scenario, the only lesson he is likely to have learned is that a second attempt at martial law must employ more violence to succeed. South Korea's future is riding on the development and outcome of the effort to bring Yoon to justice. Well, yes, indeed, and maybe a whole lot more than that. Again, just suppose American military personnel in South Korea had been attacked and killed by South Korean forces wearing North Korean uniforms. And suppose Donald Trump was president. Hell, I don't think Joe Biden would have held off, but Donald Trump certainly wouldn't have. And again, compare what is going on in Korea to what is going on or what has been going on or what may very well be going on in the U.S. I've heard apologists for Donald Trump say that the January 6th insurrectionists had a number of government agents infiltrating them. Well, of course they did. I mean, it was a domestic gladiator, the same thing we've spoken about with Monty, the same thing that was going on at the 531 Lafayette Place, 544 Camp Street address that Lee Harvey Oswald and Guy Bannister were using in the JFK assassination. Again, that was the domestic gladio that was in operation on January 6th. Again, of course, all government agents. I mean, the, quote, extremist groups, unquote, are extensions of the national security establishment. Continuing, and with our next article here. Now, it was mentioned that the bodyguards for President Soon, for President Yoon, excuse me, were basically keeping him from being taken into custody. And a New York Times article on January 8th of 2025 by Cho Sang-hun called How Bodyguards Are Keeping South Korea's Leader from Detention has some interesting insights. President Yoon Suk Yeol's security service stopped an effort to detain him on insurrection charges and has vowed to do so again. Its roots are in the era of military dictatorships. South Korea's Presidential Security Service, an agency assigned to protect the president, prides itself on being the, quote, last bastion for a safe and stable state administration, unquote. It is now at the heart of South Korea's biggest political mess in decades, acting as a final line of defense to prevent criminal investigators from detaining President Yoon Suk-yeol on charges of insurrection. Since his impeachment over a short-lived martial law declaration last month, Mr. Yoon has been holed up in central Seoul in a hilly compound that is now surrounded by barricades of buses, barbed wire, and the presidential bodyguards. He has vowed to, quote, fight to the end, unquote, to return to office. But a majority of South Koreans, according to surveys, want him ousted and arrested, and a court on Tuesday granted investigators a new warrant to detain him. The only thing standing between them and Mr. Yoon is the Presidential Security Service, or PSS, which blocked the first attempt to serve the warrant last Friday. When 100 criminal investigators and police officers showed up at his residence, the agency's staff outnumbered them 2-1 and held them off, questioning the legality of the court-ordered document. When 100 criminal investigators and police officers showed up at his residence, the agency's staff outnumbered them 2-1 and held them off, questioning the legality of the court-issued document. The two sides went back and forth during a 5.5-hour standoff before investigators abandoned efforts to detain Mr. Yoon. Much like the Secret Service does in the U.S., the PSS protects sitting and former presidents, presidents-elect, and visiting heads of state. Created in 1963 under the former dictator Park Chung-hee, the PSS was once one of the government's most powerful agencies, with the military strongmen relying on its loyalty to escape assassination attempts. By the way, Park Chung-hee, of course, one of the, quote, Manchurians, unquote, he began his service in the Japanese military during World War II. And again, he was one of the people who helped to secure not only the Chaebols, which became the backbone of the South Korean economy, evolved not only from the Japanese Zaibatsu, but many of them were created during the Japanese occupation. And he also signed the 1965 treaty that was basically used to nullify any attempts to use South Korean, to use Japanese capital to compensate the former slave laborers in South Korea who had been enslaved by Japanese corporations. We spoke about that in, for the record, 1370. It was one of the reasons why President Yoon was so unpopular, and also one of the reasons why that Japanese blog documented the Japanese influence in contemporary Korea, well, it made out that exact point. Continuing. As South Korea democratized in recent decades, it, meaning the PSS, had largely receded into the shadows. But under Mr. Yoon, it began attracting unsavory attention from the public as its agents dragged away protesters during public events. Mr. Yoon appointed Kim Jong-hyun, his most loyal ally, to serve as his first security service chief before promoting him to defense minister. Although South Korea is currently being run by an acting president after Mr. Yoon was suspended from office following his impeachment, the service has sworn to defend Mr. Yoon because he remains the sole elected leader. The Security Service has warned that there would be a clash if investigators try again to detain Mr. Yoon. The agency includes hundreds of trained bodyguards and anti-terrorist specialists who are backed by detachments from the police and military. But the Yoon has finally been indicted. And note again, this article from CNN from January 7th of 2025 by Helen Regan, Mike Valerio, Yoon Jong-soo, and Gawon Bae, BAE. Stop the Steal, unquote, in South Korea, why MAGA-like hats and slogans are part of President Yoon's impeachment drama. Crowds of people wrapped up against the bitter January cold, clutch signs emblazoned with the slogan, Stop the Steal, unquote, wave U.S. flags, and don red MAGA-like hats. But this scene is 11,000 kilometers or 7,000 miles away from Washington, D.C., in the South Korean capital, Seoul, where throngs of diehard conservative supporters of the suspended president, Yoon Suk-yeol, have gathered outside his home to protect the embattled leader from arrest one more time. But this scene is 11,000 kilometers or 7,000 miles away from Washington, D.C., in the South Korean capital, Seoul, where throngs of diehard conservative supporters of the suspended president, Yoon Suk-yeol, have gathered outside his home to protect the embattled leader from arrest. Yoon successfully resisted an attempt to detain him on Friday after an hours-long standoff with authorities over his dramatic but short-lived declaration of martial law in December that plunged the country into political chaos. South Korean lawmakers voted to impeach Yoon last month, including some from within his own party. The conservative president remains in office, but with little to no real power. His political fate will be decided by the country's constitutional court, likely in the spring, which will determine if he will be formally removed from the presidency or reinstated in office. In the meantime, corruption investigators are determined to execute the arrest warrant on charges of insurrection and abuse of power. A sitting South Korean president has never faced criminal charges before, but the man at the center of the martial law maelstrom, who is himself a former prosecutor, says he will, quote, fight until the end, unquote. Yoon, widely seen as a conservative firebrand and staunch U.S. ally tough on China and North Korea, has urged his supporters to do the same. Again, sound rather like Donald Trump. And the next article is from PBS News of January 19th of 2025. It is by Kim Tong-yung, P-O-N-G, last name P-O-N-G, hyphen couple H-Y-E-U-N-G, from the AP. Supporters of South Korea's impeached President Yoon riot over his formal arrest. Hours after South Korea's impeached President Yoon Suk-yeol were formally arrested. Hours after South Korea's impeached President Yoon Suk-yeol was formally arrested, triggering rioting by his supporters, his lawyers said Sunday that he remains defiant in his refusal to answer questions over the probe into his declaration of martial law last month. Yoon was formally arrested early on Sunday, days after being apprehended at his presidential compound in Seoul. He faces possible imprisonment over his short-lived imposition of martial law, which set off the country's most serious political crisis since its democratization in the late 1980s. Yoon's arrest could mark the beginning of an extended period in custody lasting months or more. The decision to arrest Yoon ignited unrest at the Seoul Western District Court, where dozens of his supporters broke in and rioted, destroying the main door and windows. They used plastic chairs, metal beams, and police shields that they managed to wrestle away from officers. Some were seen throwing objects and using fire extinguishers, destroying furniture and office machines, smashing glass doors, and spraying water on computer servers. They shouted demands to see the judge who had issued the warrant, but she have already left. Hundreds of police officers were deployed, and nearly 90 protesters were arrested. Some injured police officers were seen being treated at ambulance vans. The court said it was trying to confirm whether any staff members were injured and assess the damage to its facilities. In a statement issued through lawyers, Yoon lamented that the court did not recognize the, quote, just purpose, unquote, of his martial law decree, but also urged his supporters to express their frustrations peacefully. He called on the police to adopt a lenient stance toward the protesters. But hundreds of Yoon supporters continued to clash with police as they extended their rallies into the evening in front of Seoul's Constitutional Court, which is holding separate deliberations on whether to formally remove the impeached president from office or reinstate him. At least three protesters were detained at the scene. There were no immediate reports of damage to the court, which was barricaded by police. Again, does this remind you of anything? Stop the Steal, supporters rioting, and attempts at overwhelming the duly elected legislature? Does this remind you of anything? And the next is comes from the Anadolu News Service, at the Turkish News Service. South Korea's spy agency backs Ukraine account on capture of North Korean soldiers from January 12th of 2025. Now note that we've had all this publicity. We're being inundated with accounts that, but yes, North Korean soldiers are fighting in Ukraine. Actually, Russia and North Korea have a defense treaty, and it would be perfectly legal for North Korean soldiers to fight inside of Russia, and the accounts have alleged that North Korean soldiers are fighting in the Kursk region. But there has always been, shall we say, a great deal of skepticism about those reports and whether or not there actually are any North Korean soldiers there. More about that in a few minutes. But note that once again we're hearing that North Korea is supporting Russia in the Ukraine war. Exactly what happens with that remains to be seen. South Korea's spy agency on Sunday backed Ukraine's account of capturing two wounded North Korean soldiers in the Kursk region of Russia, KBS World reported. The National Intelligence Service, or NIS, said it was aware of the local battlefield situation through real-time cooperation with the Security Service of Ukraine, saying Ukraine captured the North Korean soldiers on Thursday. And note again that this is corroboration from the South Korean Intelligence Service. Gee whiz. Continuing. In a statement on X, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky on Saturday said the soldiers had been captured in Kursk and had been taken to Kiev, where they were now, quote, communicating with the Security Service of Ukraine, unquote. He added that they were receiving the, quote, necessary medical assistance, unquote. Again, this a couple of paragraphs here. South Korea's spy agency on Sunday backed Ukraine's account of capturing two wounded North Korean soldiers in the Kursk region of Russia, KBS World reported. The National Intelligence Service, we heard all about them in that article from Counterpunch, the National Intelligence Service, or NIS, said it was aware of the local battlefield situation through real-time cooperation with the Security Service of Ukraine, saying Ukraine captured the North Korean soldiers on Thursday. And contrast that with the following from the Moon of Alabama blog of January 31st of 2025. CIA and New York Times removed North Korean troops from Ukraine's front line. And that, of course, is a bit of humor there. After 3 months of intense propaganda, the CIA decided to bury a Ukrainian disinformation scheme and announced to, quote, pull North Korean troops off the front line, unquote. Well, how did North Koreans get to the front line in the first place? On October 14th, the former president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, initiated an information operation designed to increase support for Ukraine. He alleged, without evidence, that Russia planned to involve North Korea into the war. As far as I know, Zelensky is still president of Ukraine. On October 14th, the president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, initiated an information operation designed to increase support for Ukraine. He alleged without evidence that Russia planned to involve North Korea into the war. U.S.-financed media outlets in Ukraine soon prop up these rumors by citing, quote, sources in Ukraine's special services, unquote. More anonymous, quote, sources, unquote, chimed in, and soon there was talk of 3,000 soldiers from North Korea joining the fight. There was, however, zero evidence that anything like that was ever planned or even happened. I thus remarked, I regarded the whole claim of North Korean troops in Russia as a fake news story, and I am sure that most experts will follow me in that judgment. However, today, U.S. media, and of course also the South Korean Intelligence Service, however today, U.S. media managed to play up that nonsense. from the Washington Post. Why North Korea is sending soldiers to the Russian front lines. Sending soldiers to help Russia's war effort against Ukraine could earn valuable foreign currency for Kim Jong-un's regime and bolster their strengthening ties. Parenthetically, also, I would note that, again, Russia and North Korea have a defense pact, and it would be absolutely legal under that pact for North Korea to send troops to help Russia repel a military invasion. But again, there's no evidence that really that they're even there. And B, the moderator of the Moon of Alabama blog, goes on to comment, I do not believe that any politician or military in the West will believe that nonsense, which is, again, solely sourced to Ukrainian military intelligence claims. I wouldn't bet on that. There are a lot of idiots, I wouldn't bet on that one at all. Continuing. But there is a clear campaign by the Ukrainian government to make that issue stick. What is its hope? To induce South Korea to send its forces to fight North Koreans on the Ukrainian border with Russia? A few days later, it emerged that the whole Ukrainian, quote, North Korea, unquote, information operation was based on a U.S. plan. At the time of writing the above, I did not know that the idea for this campaign came from the RAND Corporation, the Pentagon's think tank which often proposes strategic ideas. In the commentary about Russian, North Korean, and Chinese cooperation published on October 11th, 3 days before the start of Zelensky's campaign, a RAND analyst wrote, quote, what should the United States do, given the differences in the objectives of Russia, China, and North Korea? The U.S. should be mounting major information operations against these three countries to highlight their differences and fuel distrust among them. The United States should recognize that North Korean military advisors are supporting Russian use of North Korean military supplies in occupied areas of Ukraine. This new cooperation between Russia and North Korea is hardly a signal of budding momentum. This new cooperation between Russia and North Korea is hardly a signal of budding long-term alliance, and U.S. information campaigns could help speed its demise. Just 3 days later, the military intelligence of the Ukrainian army, headed by General Budanov, started to quote weak, unquote, claims to the Ukrainian press about North Korean troops in Russia. Since launching the first rumors of 1,500, then 3,000 North Korean soldiers in Russia, the CIA-trained head of the Ukrainian Military Special Service, General Budanov, increased the number from hot air to 11,000 North Korean soldiers. But even NATO denied to have any knowledge of such a force. As I summarized at the time, shortly after RAND proposed a U.S. information operation campaign around the theme of North Korean soldiers in Russia, the Ukrainian Military Intelligence Service under CIA trainee Budanov started to spread rumors of North Korean soldiers soon fighting on the Russian side. One more time. Shortly after RAND proposed a U.S. information campaign around the theme of North Korean soldiers in Russia, the Ukrainian Military Intelligence Service under CIA trainee Budanov started to spread rumors of North Korean soldiers soon to fight on the Russian side. The numbers claimed by Budanov have since steadily increased, again from 1,500 to 3,000 and all the way to 11,000, continuing. South Korean intelligence, also associated with the CIA, and U.S. media have joined the campaign. The chair of the House Intelligence Committee is milking the campaign to make political points. Evidence that was supposed to support the claims have been exposed as fake. The whole story is thus based on nothing but, quote, intelligence, unquote, rumors, which are following a RAND-proposed script. Don't fall for it. The story continued to go through repetition. Media quoted each other with each adding bits of BS from the from their usual, quote, security sources, unquote. What failed to turn up, though, was evidence. After being repeatedly questioned about the lack of evidence for their claims, Ukrainian politicians presented their solution. Today, the Ukrainian Minister of Defense, Rustem Umarov, has given a hint as to how Ukraine will handle this issue. Ukrainian Defense Minister Rustem Umerov, W-U-M-E-R-O-V, confirmed the words of the head of the National Security and Defense Council's Center for Combating Disinformation, Andrei Kovalenko, that the first, quote, small-scale fighting, unquote, had already taken place between the Ukrainian armed forces and North Korean soldiers, and the Koreans had suffered losses. Umerov also said that the Russian Federation disguises Koreans as buryats, kind of B-U-R-Y-A-T-S, so the dead and prisoners must be identified before Ukraine calls the number of enemy losses. One more time. Umerov also said that the Russian Federation disguises Koreans as buryats, so the dead and prisoners must be identified before Ukraine calls the number of enemy losses. And B goes on to say, buryats are a Mongolic people in Siberia who are part of the Russian Federation. Many of them have joined the well-paid ranks of Russian forces. Umerov's plan was thus obvious. As soon as some buryat soldier of Russia will turn up dead, the Ukrainian military will present him as a disguised North Korean soldier. Some black and white photos will be found of a similar-looking person in a North Korean uniform. Quote, this is your proof. Now send soldiers and weapons, unquote, Umerov will say. There have since been several attempts by Ukrainian special services to reinforce their media campaign. Russian passports from dead Russian soldiers were presented as, quote, fake documents, unquote, carried by, quote, North Koreans, unquote. They even captured a buryat. On October 28, Jonas Oman, O-H-M-A-N, head of the Lithuanian NGO Blue Yellow, which provides aid to Ukraine and its military, informed the local media outlet LRP, stating, quote, the first encounter between a Ukrainian unit we support and North Korean soldiers occurred on the 25th in Kursk. To my knowledge, all of the North Korean soldiers except for one were killed. The surviving soldier was found carrying identification as a buryat. Other, quote, evidence, unquote, included handwritten letters, allegedly by North Korean soldiers, written in South Korean type and style. Even Wikipedia had to admit, as of January 25th, there has been no independent confirmation of the Buryat Battalion's existence, allegedly consisting of soldiers from North Korea outside of Ukrainian forces. The nonsense of this scheme has become too obvious. Now the CIA, with the help of the New York Times, is shutting it down. The, quote, North Korean soldiers, unquote, are leaving the battlefield the same way they came, ever unseen. The New York Times on January 31st of 2025. North Korean troops no longer seen on front lines fighting in Ukraine. North Korea sent its best troops to aid Russia in its war against Ukraine, but after months of suffering severe losses, they have been taken off the front line. North Korean soldiers who joined the Russian allies in battle against Ukrainian forces have been pulled off the front lines after suffering heavy casualties, according to Ukrainian and U.S. officials. The North Korean troops sent to bolster Russian forces trying to push back a Ukrainian offensive inside Russia's borders have not been seen at the front for about 2 weeks, the official said, after requesting anonymity to discuss sensitive military and intelligence matters. Well, that sentence is formally correct, but it would be even more precise to say the, quote, North Korean troops have not been seen at the front ever. The CIA and New York Times can't go there, yet they still had to add to the stupid claims. Many of the soldiers are among North Korea's best-trained operations troops, but the Russians appear to have used them as foot soldiers, sending them forth in waves across fields studded with landmines to be mowed down by heavy Ukrainian fire. You can almost see the writer, you know, ginning this up here. Continuing, well, where are the pictures and videos of North Korean troops, quote, sent forth in waves, unquote, and, quote, mowed down by heavy Ukrainian fire, unquote. In a war where every ground move is surveilled by dozens of drones, how come there is not even one video that shows evidence of such a scene? For now, the Rand-Ukrainian disinformation campaign of, quote, North Korean soldiers fighting Ukraine has been shut down. U.S. officials, however, keep the door open to relaunch it as a convenient theme, relaunch it at a convenient time. The American officials said the decision to pull the North Korean troops off the front line may not be a permanent one. It is possible, they said, that the North Koreans could return after receiving initial training or after the Russians come up with new ways of deployment to avoid such heavy casualties. Maybe a month, a year, or 10 from now, we will again be told about these imagined, quote, enemies, unquote, from North Korea, which unite with the Russians, quote, to fight us, unquote. Well, again, that is more than a little interesting. And in the last few minutes here, we're going to take a look at the Korean War. Now, bear in mind that the fellow who was in charge of border forces for Syngman Rhee's South Korean government was General Kim Suk-won, who was a distinguished member of the Japanese armed forces in World War II and one of the storied Manchurians that we've read about in, for the record, 1369, and of which Park Chung-hee was a member. From Covert Action magazine from January 31st of 2023, China appears poised to achieve through cooperation in the 21st century what Japan sought to achieve through coercion in the 20th. This is by Jeremy Kuzmarov. And I think this is much of what the U.S. is worried about in Asia. In the early morning hours of June 25th, 1950, South Korea's Office of Public Information reported a South Korean military attack on the border city of Haeju, H-A-E-J-U, which North Korea confirmed, but South Korea later retracted it. A detailed study by historian Karunakar Gupta, G-U-P-P-A, of the University of London, found that South Korean government claims that their attack on Haeju had occurred much later were effectively impossible, and that a South Korean attack likely did occur to precipitate the Korean War. And a little more about that. And again, bear in mind that Kim Suk-won of the Japanese military was in charge of the border forces for Syngman Rhee. A little bit more about that from the book The Hidden History of the Korean War by I.F. Stone, with again a preface by, among others, Tim Beale and Gregory Ellich, the author of that long counterpunch article. Now back to the John Benton and about the start of the Korean War. Back to the John Gunther account, he says that, quote, two important members of the occupation, unquote, went on the excursion to Nikko, N-I-K-K-O, and the, quote, just before lunch, unquote, one of them, quote, was called unexpectedly to the telephone, unquote. He came back and whispered, a big story has just broken. The South Koreans have attacked North Korea, unquote. And, one of the many things that's so interesting about that, we'll talk more about the start of the South Korean War. And again, bear in mind that Kim Suk-won of the Japanese military was in charge of border forces for Syngman Rhee. And something that we spoke about in our long series about the narco-fascism of Chiang Kai-shek and the Kuomintang, and this is this little bit here from the preface to the book itself. In view of the background and all the surrounding circumstances, we have come to the conclusion that what probably happened is that Syngman Rhee deliberately provoked the North Koreans in the hope that they would retaliate by crossing the parallel in force. The Northerners, for their part, fell neatly into the trap. And skipping down. Hardly had we written this before a new and most curious set of circumstances came to our attention and strengthened our conviction that this was, in fact, the way the Korean War started. Since Monthly Review was the first to dig up and publicize what may be called the soybean story, and since it does not appear in Stone's analysis of how the war started, it may be worthwhile to give a brief summary here. In the course of the MacArthur hearings that came out in June of 1950, certain Chinese established a corner on the American soybean market. Efforts by Senator McMahon to elicit further information about the incident from Secretary Atchison were unavailing. But 2 months later, certain facts were published on the financial page of the New York Herald Tribune of August 16, 1951, that suddenly put this affair in an entirely new light. Under the headline, quote, U.S. acts to halt price rigging on soybean and egg markets, the Herald Tribune printed a short item revealing, one, that the Chinese corner of the soybean market in June of 1950 had made a profit of $30 million, again, a lot of money in 1950, two, that at least 51 Chinese were involved, some living in this country and some abroad, and three, but the operation was begun just before the outbreak of the Korean War. In view of the great importance of Northeast China or Manchuria as a producer of soybeans, of the certainty that war in Korea would disrupt the world supply of this product, and of the known close connections between South Korean President Syngman Rhee and the Chiang Kai-shek government on Formosa, these facts could not but create a strong presumption that nationalist Chinese in the U.S. had got advance notice of a re-plan to start war in Korea and were turning their knowledge to financial advantage, unquote. And the Sung family were heavily involved in that, as we looked at the aforementioned series on the narco-fascism of Chiang Kai-shek and the Kuomintang, and the For the Record programs 1195 through 1214. And the strategic advantage that the Korean War provided to the West is summarized. I don't know if we'll have time to read this in the time we have. Let me see. Whether on June 25th the North attacked without provocation or went over to the offensive after an attack from the South, this is reading from the Hidden History of the Korean War. The attempt to pick up the attempting plum solved many political problems on the anti-communist side. Within 2 days, it gave Chiang Kai-shek American protection against an invasion from the mainland. It shelved the question of a general peace treaty for Japan and put off the withdrawal of occupation troops and the abandonment of American bases there. It gave Syngman Rhee long salary regarded by the State Department, a sudden respectability, and the support of the U.S. and the United Nations at the very moment when his hold on South Korea seemed to have been ended by the convocation of a new legislature on June 19th, which parenthetically was opposed to him. Conversely, the attack created new problems on the communist side. The Chinese Reds could not proceed with the occupation of Formosa to which they were committed without coming into frontal conflict with the U.S. Those Japanese bomber bases so near Vladivostok and the Soviet Union would be retained by the U.S. indefinitely. The hope that the South Korean regime would collapse under the impact of the first free elections, the northern demands for unification, the possibility of an easy, quote, liberation, unquote, march southward from the 38th parallel, all these vanished. The repercussions were equally disadvantageous to Moscow. On the broader panorama of world affairs. Trygve Lie's, Moscow's U.N. representative, lonely pilgrimage for peace between the hostile Washington trying to blanket peace with quote, diplomacy and a suspicious Moscow unwilling to appear too anxious was brought to a sudden end. His appeal for direct peace talks between Washington and Moscow was made public and buried in the same day's newspapers, which brought the tragic news of the Korean War. What Moscow most feared, the campaign to rearm the Germans as well as the Japanese, was given a sudden impasse in Washington. Finally, the mobilization of America's vast industrial power was set in motion for war and, quote, containment, unquote, in a far more severe form than before, was extended from the Atlantic to the Pacific, as had long been demanded by Chiang and MacArthur. And this last item noting that a peace in 1952 was disadvantageous to John Foster Dulles. Dulles feared that peace would fatally interfere with his plan to rebuild the old Axis powers for a new anti-Soviet crusade. And that concludes For the Record program number 1372, Korea on Our Minds, Part 5. This is being recorded on February 1st of 2025. I'm Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.